All right, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate, and we've got a jam-packed show for you today and one that is very important. It's the last show before the launch of the movement. November 4th, it begins. No, this nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. We're going to have a special session on the back end of the show. We're going to be listening to some of the Q&A from a talk that Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, gave a little while ago around the Trump-Pence regime must go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America. A better world is possible. And again, that's a talk by Bob Avakian. And these are two of the questions that were asked of Avakian during that talk. And opening the show up, I am very pleased to welcome back Sansara Taylor. Sansara Taylor is a writer for Revolution Newspaper. She is also co-initiator and spokesperson for Refuse Fascism. Sansara Taylor, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, you too. You've been very much involved. You've been part of helping to lead this whole campaign that's been developing over the last, since Trump actually came into office, this whole campaign to drive out the Trump-Pence regime. And basically, at the same time as you've been involved in that, the regime itself has been steadily moving to consolidate this fascist regime and push ahead with all the stuff that they're doing. Tell people, how bad is the situation? What is the situation? How bad is it?
Well, you know, we have now several times had the Republican head of the Senate Foreign Relations Council come out, Bob Corker, and warn the world that Donald Trump is putting us on the path towards World War III. And this is not, you know, what they call a dove. This is not what you call a peacenik. This is somebody who himself is a stone cold imperialist. He's he's a racist. He's a reactionary Republican conservative who is coming out and saying Donald Trump is putting all of us on the path towards World War III. I think this is, it would be very difficult to overstate the danger that we're facing. And not just we in a small sense. I mean, we as in global humanity. We're looking at a threat of a nuclear holocaust. I mean, Donald Trump told the world that he would, in front of the UN, with no shame, no pause, no hedging of his words, he said to the world in front of the UN, I will completely destroy North Korea. Not just the regime, which would be bad enough, not just the weapons installations, which would be bad enough, but the whole country, 26 million people. We're talking about a genocide, and no one should kid themselves that Donald Trump, someone who says that the Central Park Five should still be in jail, you know, five people who were wrongfully imprisoned, black and Latino men who were wrongfully imprisoned as teenagers for years and were finally exonerated and let out, and Donald Trump says they should still be in prison, that Donald Trump, who brags about sexual assault, that Donald Trump, who looked at the Nazis and the white supremacists carrying torches in Charlottesville after they murdered Heather Heyer and said, I saw very fine people in that crowd. No one should kid themselves that Donald Trump is not as big a threat as the Republican head of the Foreign Relations Council can see him as, which is, you know, really threatening global humanity with World War III. And this is, you know, there's a lot of dimensions to the danger he poses and the whole regime. It's Pence, too. It's Jeff Sessions, too. It's Tillerson. It's the whole regime. John Kelly, who is supposed to be, a lot of people thought he'd be the force for reason, who's come out and backed everything that Trump is doing, all of his threats and his lies, not surprisingly. John Kelly, who is the architect of Guantanamo Torture Island. But this is full red alert, and it's not a localized danger. It's a global danger. So I think, you know, this is something we have to be sober about. This is something we have to confront, and this is something that, frankly, is being normalized. It's being downplayed. People are being coaxed into thinking it's bad. Yes, we all hate him, but somehow we have to get through it. And the whole point of refusefascism.org and the whole plan for the November 4th protests, which are a launch to an ongoing, sustained movement, is that you don't try to weather the storm when the storm is remaking the country and the world in a fascist way. You have to stand up, and we have to take the responsibility to not become normalized, to not become accommodated to this, and to use the power that we do have to go out into the streets and nonviolent political protest and take it upon ourselves to drive this illegitimate, white supremacist, woman-hating, xenophobic nightmare of a regime out of power.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me this, actually, and this is extremely important because it's like this is exactly the point that people need to hear. One of the things I wanted to ask you, though, is like you were saying, literally every branch of the government has been taken over by fascists. If you look at it, I mean, they've done it. Like, you know, it's not like been just like sweeping in and, you know, they ride in with their tanks and everything else and they take over everything. But it's been done in a very, you know, what seems to be, you know, it's like they rush and do it and then they do a little settling in. They let people get some breath and then they rush and do it again. But there's been all these things that are happening. And their base has certainly been mobilized in a big way, but also Refuse Fascism has actually stepped up and spoken about the need to close the gap between, and I'll quote this, between the extreme danger posed by the Trump-Pence regime and the level of mass resistance to it. Let's talk about that because at some point, you know, there is a point about it. You can't be too late. You can't say, oh, well, we wanted to do this, but we were too late. So let's talk about that.
Well, I think the first thing you said about every branch of government is now being controlled by fascists, by part of this fascist wing of the Republican Party. And that's true. And, you know, a lot of people were very heartened when Senator Flake stood in front of the world the other day and said, I can't go along, I can't normalize, I can't be a party to the incivility and the crassness and the undermining of U.S. democracy that Trump is, you know, imposing. And people took heart in that. And it was very heavy, some of the things that Flake said, but notice what happened. It was not a domino effect. No other Republicans stepped forward and joined in. The Democrats were silent. Flake himself is resigning. Steve Bannon and the Trump camp are celebrating because this means that they're going to have fuller consolidation and free reign to impose their full fascist program unobstructed. And I think this is one example. Many examples could be given where there's no one in power who is going to stop this regime. There's no one up there. There's not a referee. This is not a little league soccer game where if somebody breaks the rules, the adults come in and say, oh, you can't do that. You can't shove people and knock them down. You got to play by the rules. Donald Trump is the commander-in-chief of the sole superpower in the world, and he's remaking the rules. He's remaking the norms, and every branch of government is falling in line. And they put up, you know, they put up a little bit of resistance here and there, but they eventually the program slams forward and they fall in line. And the Democrats, they've expressed differences, but they've enabled this. You know, when Trump ended DACA, the very next day you had Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer grinning ear to ear, proud as could be to be getting a photo op with Donald Trump over some budget that they passed. Bipartisanship. Oh, look what we, and over the lives and the dreams and the aspirations and the terror that was coursing through immigrant communities that very minute, that very hour. This is what the Democrats were doing, collaborating with and normalizing and facilitating this fascist Trump-Pence regime. This is what the Republicans all the way up and down are doing. This is what is happening in the media. You know, they complain about what Trump does, but they normalize Trump. Every day you listen to the talking heads on CNN, even MSNBC, forget about Fox, and they're sitting there on CNN and MSNBC. At best, they make fun of Trump. They pick apart some of the mistruths. They won't call them lies, you know, and they tell you, oh, he's ineffectual. He's getting nothing done. This is a lie. He's getting a huge amount done, and it's moving fast, and it's happening. And my point in saying this is that in America, it's deeply embedded in the culture here that politics is something you leave to others. You know, maybe every few years you cast a ballot, and if you really don't like what's happening in the meantime, you write a letter to Congress, you write a letter, and you ask somebody else to take care of it for you. And a lot of people's political life and political action has been leaving the driving to others or pressuring others to do the right thing. This is a moment we have to recognize. It's on us to do the right thing. That's what November 4th, that's what Refuse Fascism is saying, is that we have to go into the streets. We have to make the demand. This nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. We have to demand that. And everybody should ask themselves. You know, we look back at the people who went along during the rise and consolidation of Nazi Germany, and everybody's asked themselves, how could they do it? How could they go along? Well, ask yourself now, are you going to be somebody who sits back and goes on about your life? You know, maybe grumbles, maybe complains, maybe is disgusted, but goes on about your life as fascism is consolidated in America and hopes somebody else takes care of it? Or are you going to be somebody who changes what you do and how you live and says, no, it's my responsibility. And not just my responsibility to make lifestyle changes, but my responsibility to wake up my neighbors and my friends and organize them to join me. Because if we had all the people who are sick at heart, even starting with 3% of the people who are sick at heart and disgusted by what Trump and Pence are imposing, if we went into the streets and we said, no, we're not letting this happen, and we're not just asking, we're demanding, and we're not going back to normal as long as normal is taking us on a path towards nuclear holocaust. We're going into the streets. We start November 4th. It's a mass nonviolent political protest all over the country to demand this regime must go. But what's different? Well, the difference is two things. One, we're making the demand the regime must go. We're recognizing that until they're driven from power, they're going to keep slamming ahead. They can't be, you know, moderated. They have to be driven out. And two, we're going to keep coming back. It's not just a one-day thing. We're going to come back day after day and grow. And we're going to start with thousands, and we're going to grow to tens of thousands, and we're going to call forward millions. So the question really is for people, are you going to be part of stepping forward and starting that and fighting for others to join? Because everybody has a responsibility. We didn't pick this time. We didn't choose to be born or come of age or experience our middle age or our twilight years or wherever we are in our lives. We didn't choose to live in a time and a moment in history where literally the future of direction of the world is being determined by a madman, a demented bully with his finger on the nuclear trigger, who's in charge. We didn't pick it, but this is what we have. And we're responsible for which way this goes. And right now it's going in a dangerous direction, and nobody in power is going to stop it. The people are going to have to stop it. That's on us. That's our responsibility. That's also something we're capable of. And we're not alone. But we have to have the courage to act. We have to have the courage to act together. And we have to do it before it's too late.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Sansara Taylor. Sansara is a writer for Revolution Newspaper, and she is also one of the co-initiators of the Refuse Fascism campaign. Let me ask you this, and this is extremely important, because in the midst of listening to you and listening to what you're saying about this, I thought about, okay, there's an importance to everything you're saying. There's an importance to this, to everything you're saying, and including to the fact that actually this kind of movement is the kind of movement that is absolutely needed. And its demands, how it's being carried out in the street, its demands and all this, this is actually what is really capable of doing this, as you were saying. At the same time, now you're also faced with something else, because there has been a concerted attack on Refuse Fascism and on, you know, the whole idea of what's being planned over this next period of time. Let's talk about that. It's been attacks from all the various Nazis that have been out there, from Alex Jones to whoever, you know, just issuing all kinds of things, including stormtroopers, the day-to-day in-the-street stormtroopers that seem to be writing in and you know, making all these comments about things. And this is a very real and serious thing, particularly if you're talking about the kind of movement we're talking about having.
Yeah, I think this is really important too. So it's right now, refusefascism.org, which is a group for everybody from whatever political perspective you're coming from. If you don't want the nightmare that Trump Pence are imposing, you belong in this movement. We should be working together, learning from each other, uniting. And even if we have big differences in world outlook, we all agree we don't want a fascist America. We're working together on this. And we're calling for mass nonviolent political protest in a sustained way to drive the regime out. There's been, because of that, and I think out of a recognition of just how powerful what we're planning is and how much potential it holds because of how deep the fear and outrage at what Trump and Pence are doing, because of how deep that is, I think there's a recognition on the part of Trump supporters, various fascist forces, and the regime itself, probably on different levels, they feel politically threatened by what we're calling for. And they know that it has power. And so they have launched, and it's been growing over the last month and a half, but it really took a leap a couple weeks ago when Alex Jones took this up. Alex Jones, who's a infamous nut job, lunatic conspiracy theorist, who's also a fascist and a white supremacist, and and a and a confidant and friend of Donald Trump's. And he has an internet radio program Trump has been on several times. He's been invited on the phone with Trump and all of this. So these are, you know, I wish we could say they're just lunatic fringe on the edge, but they're lunatic fringe with connections to power. They've been putting out this lie. I think they've recognized and they're worried about this movement to drive the Trump-Pence regime from power. So they've been putting out the lie that really this is not nonviolent protests we're planning. Really, there's a civil war being planned by leftist, Antifa, communists, all of this. And they're trying to scare people away from participating in November 4th by spreading lies. And at the same time, they're whipping up huge amounts of threats from white supremacists and Nazi forces, which have been growing. I mean, violence against protesters, we saw that in Charlottesville, that Heather Heyer was murdered, but many anti-racist protesters were beaten and hospitalized by these white supremacists who came out and marched. And so, you know, these are credible threats of violence that are being marshaled against the protests that we're planning. And I think, you know, this only to us underscores, one, why everybody, you know, if you're listening, you should not only come out on the 4th and defy these threats and stand up and say, no, we reject a future like this, where people are terrorized out of expressing their opposition to the attacks on immigrants, to their opposition to the violent sexual degradation of women, where people are terrorized out of standing up against the nuclear holocaust, against the North Korean people. We won't be intimidated by that, but also we have to get the word out to everybody about what November 4th actually is. This is a serious movement to join with. And so we got to spread the word on our social media. We got to spread the word with our friends, into our church groups, into our mosques, into our campuses, into our networks, whatever they are, atheist meetup, whatever your network is, spread the word of what November 4th actually is. This is a movement, a mass nonviolent movement that we're launching, a political protest to demand the end and the ouster of this regime in the name of humanity. And the last thing I want to say about this is that these threats against protest, you know, they actually are, they're unleashed by this regime. It was Donald Trump who campaigned and kept saying at his rallies, I want to punch that protester in the face. It was Donald Trump who said, I long for the days when protesters were carried out on stretchers. Fascism is a remaking of the state. It's a form of open, blatant dictatorship and rule through terroristic violence from the state against people who are demonized, xenophobic nationalism and anti-Muslim bigotry and white supremacy, all of that from the state, as well as from the mob that it unleashes. And so these threats against the protests that we're doing are not different than. They're part of this fascist rise, the fascist regime and the rise of fascism in America. And they actually make it even more important that people stand up and defy this and drive the regime out before it's too late. And we pledge on for reduced fascism that we're very serious about leading people to stand together, to have each other's backs, to come out in numbers that grow and grow and that make it the best possible circumstances for the safety of people standing up, but even more than that, for the future safety of people all over the world. Because if we allow them to intimidate us, we're giving them the future, and it is a nightmare. It is a nightmare that should not be accepted. And so it makes it, like I said, all the more important. RefuseFascism.org. You should go to the website. You should sign up to come out and protest. We're having protests in New York, in Chicago, in Los Angeles, in Atlanta, in Houston, in Cleveland, in Seattle. We're having them all over the country. Find the protest nearest you or plan your own and spread the word. The more people come out, the stronger we are in stopping this regime, and the stronger we are in standing up and turning back the intimidation and giving heart to others so that we can grow, because we're going to go forward. After November 4th, we're going to have student walkouts. We're going to have protests in an ongoing way that grow, a lot like what happened in what happened in South Korea over the end of last year and early this year, where thousands and eventually millions kept coming out night after night, night after night, night after night in nonviolent protest until they created the kind of situation they drove their president out. Mm-hmm. We need to do that here in the name of humanity. Mm-hmm. We must refuse to accept a fascist America. That's our responsibility, and it's something we have the power to do.
Sansar, you know, maybe we can have you back as we're sitting on the day before. That would be kind of cool. I'd like to.
Yeah,
you know.
I'd like that. You know, one other thing I just want to mention before I jump off is that I really recommend everybody get into this more deeply. I would go to revcom.us as well. It's the website for Revolution Newspaper. And Bob Avakian,
who's the
leader of the Revolutionary Communist Party, gave a talk recently on that went very deeply into why the Trump-Pence regime must go and how we've gotten in this situation with the fascist regime in power, what that has to do with the whole history of this country, the white supremacy, the role of this country in the world, what it's done, and why there's a fascist regime in power, and how and why it is possible to drive it out. This is an incredible talk, a very deep Q&A that follows it. It's a great resource. I would make the time, pop it in on your computer or your phone, listen to it. It's about an hour long, and then the Q&A is very deep. And this is, it's fuel. It's intellectual, ideological, and scientific, and frankly, heart-filled fuel for us to understand what we're up against and to come together to actually rise to this challenge before us. So I want to recommend that as an extraordinary resource, and I want to thank you for having this conversation, and I hope that a lot of people take this to heart and go to both those websites, revcom.us and refusefascism.org, and let's work together on this.
All right, Sansara, I'll talk to you again soon. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye now. All right, once again, that was Sansara Taylor, one of the co-initiators of the campaign to drive out the Trump-Pence regime. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back with some excerpts from a talk by Bob Avakian. Welcome back. Right now, we're going to listen to an excerpt from a talk given by Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party. And that talk concentrated on the Trump-Pence regime must go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America. A better world is possible. And again, that's a talk by Bob Avakian. And these are two of the questions that were posed to Avakian during that talk.
Let me see how many hands there are from the audience. Okay, so 1, 2, 3. So right here, yeah.
I also am heavily involved with Refuse Fascism. I'm on the steering committee, and I know that our steering committee has spent extensive amounts of time trying to figure out what November 4th is going to look like, the launch, and then the days to follow. And one of my questions was for you, like, I'm just curious to know what you envision November 4th to look like in this country, and then what do you envision the days following November 4th to look like? And then my other question was, you know, there is this idea of reaching out broadly, and that includes people that don't necessarily agree with the need of a revolution. But what if that actually isn't happening in reality? How could we overcome that obstacle? So those are my two questions.
Yeah, well, I think those two questions are closely connected. Because first of all, in the few weeks remaining before November 4th, the word really has to get out about this on a whole other level from what it is now. I mean, it should not only be all over social media, but I don't know what the appropriate, means are, or the appropriate embodiment is, but in the old days, we would have said signs and stickers should have been everywhere, so that the word really needs to get out broadly. I think there are a lot of people out there. I'll get to your second question in a minute, but I think there are a lot of people out there who would gravitate to this if they knew about it. And one of the big contradictions is not nearly enough people. This is my sense. I hope I'm wrong, but somebody can tell me if I'm wrong. But if I'm right, it's a problem that needs to be worked on. That the word needs to get out much more broadly, and we need to really be creative in finding the ways. It goes back a little bit to the question that was raised about Amy Goodman and the media and so on. We got to find a lot of different ways to get the word out. It should be that everybody, in a city like, I know New York, look, it's a big city, for example, New York, but it's also, one of the things that strikes me every time I come here is that, Manhattan is a small place with a lot of people, so it should be possible to get, people are packed, it should be possible to reach a lot of people in Manhattan and, You know, I don't want to sound like Frank Sinatra or something, but, you know, if you make a big deal in New York, it'll be a big deal, okay? So we got to figure, that's got to be figured out. People should put their heads together and figure out how to get the word out on whole different levels in a way that's building. One thing building on another. You know, people learn about it, get involved, reach more people. But also, what are some creative means to break into the media that doesn't want to do this, you know, doesn't want to get out the word about this? What are all the different kind of ways that the word can get out and people can begin to get organized? I mean, it goes, you know, I know that, for example, the Women's March, look, I don't want to be cynical, but one of the reasons I think it was as big as it was because it was called for the day after the inauguration. So it was a, you know, and look, it was a very positive thing. Let me be clear. I don't want to imply that it was not very positive. But one of the things about it was a little bit easier for people to be part of that, because if it had been on Inauguration Day, it would have been a whole different thing. Or if it had been the day before, it would have been even another whole different thing. So, you know, I feel that we have to really capture people's imagination with you know, the living reality of A, what is really going on and why this is necessary, and B, the living reality that people are really determined to make this happen and are going to overcome every obstacle that they can overcome to make it happen. So that kind of message needs to get out on a whole other level, not just in New York, but all over the place. That's one thing that I would emphasize. And people need to put their heads together and figure that out. The second thing I would say is that while, you know, the things you talked about are things that should be done, there also needs to be built into it a way that things can build, so that what you're doing is actually being amplified and new waves of people are being drawn in day after day. Otherwise, I'm afraid what will happen is the numbers will diminish day by day by day. If there isn't a conception and an orientation and actual thinking and plans about how can these demonstrations be, you know, like a lightning bolt that you know, that lights up the sky and thousands of people are involved, but tens of thousands and millions actually are learning about it, and then it's drawing people to it. You know, that I think that's very important. What I wanted to say about the Women's March was not just a negative thing, it was a little easier to do it, and not just that it was positive overall, but I do think it reflected a sentiment that's still there, that people really hate this. You know, tens and tens of millions of people hate this, and somehow, and not just somehow magically, but by going to work on it, that somehow, this has to be translated into their becoming involved. All tens of millions are not going to get involved right away. But thousands, the reason the formulation is used, thousands growing to millions, is not just the same people are determined and keep doing things, but that everything they do becomes both a lightning rod to draw the attention of broader people, and the means are incorporated into it that make possible drawing new numbers of people. And so you get a dynamic, if you want to use that word, going where, you know, it does become like the Women's March. You know, a few people had the idea, and then it caught on. And then there were waves of people got more and more involved. That's what needs to happen here in the very, very telescope period of a few weeks between now and November 4th, and then going forth on November 4th. So we have to be, you know, down on the ground, you know, dealing with the real world, but we also have to really think big, you know, and then connect the two. How do you take a big vision and actually do things to work toward making it a reality? So that's what I would say about that. And this needs to happen, you know, not just in Manhattan, you know, but other parts of New York, and people being drawn to Manhattan who don't usually come to Manhattan. I mean, there are people out there in the other boroughs, or even other parts of Manhattan who don't come to the part of Manhattan you're talking about. That has to get overcome too. Thinking has to go in about that. How do you make it so that people, it's a magnet that people come there from all over, you know, Manhattan, but also all over the city, while they're doing other things in other parts of the city as well. And the same thing in other cities and towns. But I would say the key thing now, along with developing the actual thinking and plans for that, is really coming up with really creative, determined ways to get the word out on a whole other level. Did I speak to the second part of your question, or was that there was something else?
Okay, the idea that like we're supposed to be reaching out broadly, but it's not.
Oh, yeah, it's not happening.
It doesn't feel like it's happening in reality. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I'm familiar with the phenomenon, not only in this particular situation. I mean, sometimes things really take off, and sometimes what you're talking about happens, and it's very frustrating. And I think there are, you know, first of all, there is a question of a lot of more people have to know about it. Second of all, people, including the communists who are working in Refuse Fascism, we have to get better at what we're doing so that people don't feel they have to agree with us on everything that we're about, you know, in order to be part of this. That's one thing. On the other hand, we have to struggle with people. You know, there are some of these prejudices. Some of them are not without any justification, and most of them are that, you know, this is some sort of scheme to manipulate people into something, and that's why they, even though we say we want it to be very broad, we don't really mean that, you know, we just want it to be tightly controlled. Look, this needs to be a movement that's way out of the control of any particular group of people, including, you know, our party and the people who are close around it. I don't mean out of control in a bad sense. I mean in a good sense, that there's just so many people involved that, you know, that all kinds of things are happening with all kinds of initiative that, you know, that's the image and the vision that we need to be having in mind and aiming for. And I think, you know, we need to talk honestly with people about, you know, if people are, you know, I mean, you know, I remember hearing about, you know, one area where somebody said, well, you know, we're just not attracting people, and I'm not going to come back until we talk about why we're not attracting people. Well, that's a legitimate thing. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about people. Let's talk with people who were involved and then dropped away. You know, let's talk with the new people about getting involved. But let's really have the orientation, you know, that we mean what we say. This has to be very, very broad. I mean, look, it should involve people who say, look, I don't know about this fascism thing. It's not like Refuse Fascism should drop its analysis. That's a very important analysis that should be at the core of this. But you need to have people involved say, I don't know if I, even what fascism is, you know, I don't know if I agree with you about all that, but I hate this and I think it's terrible and I think we need to, I agree with you, we need to mobilize people to get it out of there. Well, those people should be not only, you know, hold your nose, okay, come in, but should be, and not only just welcome, but should be actively involved and encouraged to take initiative to draw in more people like themselves. You know, and then we can keep on discussing, well, what is this fascism? Why do we insist on calling it fascism? Why don't we just say it's bad? You know, is there a particular meaning to fascism? And what is it? Is there a history there we can learn from? Yeah, we should discuss those things, but let's, if we really agree this is terrible and it really is going to be disastrous if this keeps going its way, then you, if you agree with that, you should be involved. And yes, you know, you're gonna come in contact with some people from the RCP, and you know they're gonna make some mistakes, just like you're gonna make some mistakes. But you're probably gonna survive it. You know what I mean? And so come on in. Let's all get together. You know, this is what we agree on. You know, if you agree on this, then you need to be involved, and don't make excuses not to be involved because some people are involved that you don't agree with. I mean, if we have a great cause, and this is a great cause, you're going to have to be involved with a lot of people that you disagree with about things. You know, I mean, like I said, you know, I engaged in this dialogue with Cornel West, whom I have a great deal of respect for, but I have some big disagreements with him, and so does he with me, obviously. You know, well, that's it. We want that kind of spirit and atmosphere, and you know, come on in. The water's fine. There are a lot of really good people, you know, who have, you know, really good hearts and really good ideas about what needs to happen and what can't be tolerated. And come in and be part of that. And we have to just keep working on it. I don't think there's a magic solution. But if people, you know, I don't care who they are, if it's, you know, if it's our people, other people are acting in ways that set up barriers to people, then we should talk about not doing that. You know, it's we shouldn't put up barriers to people that are wrong. You know, if people want to come in and say, you know, well, I'd like to join your group, but I think it should be a group to support Trump. Well, okay, then those people don't belong. But you know, there shouldn't be artificial barriers to people getting involved. You know, you should have a welcoming atmosphere to people. This is a really great cause. It is, you know, for humanity. It really is. And that should come across in the way we approach people. And it's what we should encourage people to be themselves coming in on. So I don't know any magic solution to that, except that we have to have the right orientation and we have to keep working on it. And when we make mistakes or we think other people are making mistakes, we should raise them and discuss them honestly. It's very important. What refuse fascism is I can't overstate it. It's extremely important. And so we shouldn't be bashful about telling people that we think they're making mistakes, you know. And if you tell me I'm making a mistake and I don't agree, then we can discuss it. You know, if you point out something to me and I can see it right away, so much the better. But that's the kind of atmosphere we need to have here with all kinds of diverse people. You know, we really do not just say that, but we have to, you know, I know you mean it or you wouldn't be raising the question. I mean, you know, why is this happening? So we all mean it, but we have to actually get better at doing it. And we have to help each other, including by telling each other when we think we're making mistakes. You know, we don't have to, you know, immediately agree. Maybe somebody thinks they're doing the right thing and you're wrong. But still, we should discuss it without it become. Look, this is not about us in our egos or narrow things like that. It's about what is happening in the world and what this means for humanity. And if we keep that in mind, then we can deal with these things in a good way.
You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and you're listening to an excerpt from a talk given by Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party. And the talk was called "The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America. A better world is possible." And once again, it was a talk by Bob Avakian, and these are two of the questions posed to Avakian during the Q&A period of that talk.
Okay, there we go. Where was the other hand over here? Just
first of all, thank you. That was a really good, helpful answer. So we've been going out to people, trying to tell millions of people that we need to drive out this regime before it becomes too late. And something I've learned along the way is that the urgency of this comes from two windows that we're facing that are closing. The one window being, you know, the reality of fascism and how it operates is moving fast to silence and eliminate the opposition, you know, with the way Trump tweeted against flag burning and then the way that inspired these state laws, you know, allowing cars to run down protesters and now attacking and intimidating people in the NFL who take a knee and now, you know, the introduction of COINTELPRO 2.0. And then on the other side, the other window that you have is the normalization that seems like it's growing so much worse every day, especially around the genocide we're facing of North Korea. You know, I was just talking with someone the other night who was just so enraged, and I mean, she felt hopeless because one of the top five articles on the Huffington Post website that day talked about, like, the headline was literally, "We're facing a genocide." They use the words genocide of North Korea. And, you know, millions of people are reading this and millions of people do know what's going on. But then you get on the train, you get on the bus, you walk down the street, and it's, you would never know that this was happening. It's very difficult. When Trump came to the UN, we knew he was going to give the speech of a fascist. We knew that he was going to threaten North Korea. And he threatened to totally destroy them, not just bomb them, not just take out their regime, to totally destroy 25 million people. And no one protested. And that is so shameful. I mean, we went out in the middle of the day when the speech was going on. There were seven of us. You know, later maybe 100 people came out. It is so shameful that a city of 8 million people won't protest that. And so I know that there are a lot of factors to this, like individualism you were talking about earlier, selfishness, but then there are good-hearted people. I know most of the people I see on the train don't want that to happen. Anyway, so my question is, how are we analyzing, like in an ongoing way, these two windows and the rate at which they're closing? I know that calling for November 4th was part of this and factored both of those windows into that, but I was really struck by the Reichstag fire example that you gave earlier. Because that you said something about it that I hadn't known before. I didn't know that the extent to which people didn't realize what that the Reichstag fire was, the Reichstag fire, essentially, that people then, when the communists, some of them were acquitted for this, they thought, oh, the separation of powers, the checks and balances are working. And that is so the dynamic you see here right now, that you know the Muslim ban is in effect right now. And people are making excuses. People are saying the courts will save us. People are saying special investigators, Congress. So yeah, we say millions of people feel the way we do. But if they don't act, does that matter? We say we still have time, but how do we know that we still have time? How do we know how much time we have left? And how will we know if these windows are fully closed? And what will we do if they do close?
Yes. yeah, it's maddening. I mean, it is. The contradiction you're pointing to is extremely frustrating. In other words, there are people with all these sentiments, but they're all looking, you know, it's like, you know, the reggae song by Peter Tosh, you know, Equal Rights. I don't know if you know that song, but, you know, it's a sort of well-known reggae singer who was murdered in the late 80s. And he has a line in the song that's a common saying, I think, in Jamaica. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. And that's kind of what we're facing, you know, is... You know, everybody wishes, you know, that, you know, with a lot of, you know, emotion even, a strong sentiment, wishes this would go away, you know, or this wouldn't go where it seems to be going. But the rub is actually getting people to make the sacrifices that are required to deal with this. And rather than just hoping that somehow it's all going to work itself out. And, you know, that I share your sense, you know, of frustration. It's very real. And, you know, I don't think there's a magic solution to that. I will speak to the two windows in a minute. But I do think, you know, that again, we have to struggle with people that, you know, this is not going to get better. The first of all, look, right now, all three branches of government are in the hands of the same people, even with the contradictions that exist. And there are contradictions. You know, you got Senator Corker, a Republican, talking about, you know, Trump in very derogatory terms, and Trump tweeting. You know, there's a, you know, and Trump attacks McCain for not voting for the, you know, getting rid of Obamacare, whatever. You know, there are the contradictions. But look, this is a bad situation, a terrible situation. All three branches of government are in the hands of the same people, essentially, and are going to Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, looking into it, it turns out, from what I understand, that his voting record most closely, you know, tracks that of Clarence Thomas. So that tells you what you're dealing with there. So that's a majority on the Supreme Court. So even just looking at it on these terms, you know, even if the lower courts in Hawaii or Washington or do this or that, look, the Supreme Court's going to do what it's going to do, and it's not going to be good. You know, and the Democrats are, you know, look at this thing with, you know, Nancy Piglosi and Schumer, you know. Nancy Piglosi and Schumer are in there, you know, toadying up to Trump, you know, oh, Trump likes me, you know, all this kind of, you know, you think those people are going to solve this problem? They're gonna prevent the horrors from continuing and getting much worse, you know, or you think somehow, you know, and it's all these illusions. Like I saw a clip from the Michael Moore show on Broadway, and one of the people was up on the stage with him was saying, well, you know, these politicians, they're going to have to come around and do the right thing because they want to get elected. See, this is exactly the kind of logic that has been so deadly. You know, the politicians, you know, first of all, the way things are set up, these Republican politicians are pretty inoculated from not getting reelected anyway, unless it's some even more, you know, lunatic right winger who challenges them in the primary. So, you know, you even on that level, you're not gonna, you know, they're not worried about how people who come to a Michael Moore show on Broadway are not going to vote for them. You know, they're not worried about that, you know, and the more fundamental reason that they do what they do is because, you know, they are part of a machinery that believes that the system that they are ultimately all representatives of needs to go in a certain direction that it's going now with Trump and Pence. So they're not, the Republican Party is not going to all of a sudden come to its senses and be patriotic and put the country ahead of party and blah, 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 blah. That's not going to happen. So, you know, I think we need to get into this with people and say, look, you know, this is, it's hard. I mean, I would be willing to bet that the two of you sitting next to each other have uprooted your lives to some significant degree to be part of this, you know, and others here too, you know, because why? Because of what you recognize that we're talking about, because you recognize, you know, what the stakes are, to put it simply. And we have to struggle with other people that they have to do the same. You know, it's not that we're just, you know, in some trivial way asking people to do something that's unpleasant or that, you know, requires some sacrifice. It's because of the stakes here. And we really have to struggle with people. I don't know any, you know, magic solution other than struggling with people. First of all, we really do have to get out the word. Here's one thing. If people just feel like, okay, you've got good arguments, but you're just one person and there's just a few people, I agree with you. It is an absolute disgrace that when Trump gave that speech, there should have been massive demonstrations all over the country. I mean, you know, look, I don't want to, we were so great back in the good old days. No, you know, people did things because they recognized what was happening, you know, what needed to be done. And as I pointed out, a lot of the people who were very good back in the good old days are not so good now. But one thing, you know, I was thinking of when this happened at the UN was what happened when Nixon bombed Cambodia during the Vietnam War after saying he was not going to expand the war into Cambodia. There was a massive outpouring, especially on the campuses, but broader than that, of people all over the country just poured out spontaneously into the streets. That's when you had the Kent State, you know, assassination of the people demonstrating there. And I saw a program, it was really heavy. I saw a program on CNN, believe it or not, about the Kent State thing. And, you know, after they shot these people, wounded a bunch and killed four people, the National Guard, the protesters regrouped on a grassy area, and they were facing off against the National Guard. And one of the people who was part of the protest said, you know, there was an argument among us about whether we should just charge the National Guard. And somebody said, well, a bunch of us are going to die. And then this person said, other people are saying, yeah, but look what's going on. Now, I'm not saying, just to be clear. No, I'm just trying to describe the character of how people, the intensity of people's, you know, revulsion at this and their determination to do something. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not, again, the point of November 4th is not that people should charge the National Guard and get killed. Just to be absolutely clear, it's not the point that I'm making. The point I'm making is that should have been, that kind of sentiment, that kind of outrage, that kind of, this is intolerable. We will not stand by while the head of the most powerful state in the world talks about obliterating countries and threatens nuclear war. And people should have been pouring out into the streets. That's my essential point. They should have been pouring out into the streets the way they did around the bombing of Cambodia. That's my point. It's not that they should have charged the National Guard. I was saying that to say what the depth of people's outrage was at that point, that even after the National Guard had killed people, they were debating about whether they should do that again, you know, whether they should go up. And they were unarmed. You know, it isn't like they were talking about going and grabbing arms. They were unarmed, all those people protesting. They were not armed. So that's different than November 4th. Let me make clear again, just so nobody tries to, they'll try anyway, but just so any distortions of it cannot stand. That's my point is not people should go charging the National Guard. I'm saying there should be that kind of outrage. I agree with you. And I do think a lot of it is the individualism, but also this American chauvinism is such a big thing. This idea that, you know, we're the good guys in the world. I mean, how many times have you heard a CNN reporter or so on, you know, with their ill-fitting helmet going around with the troops in Afghanistan, talking about, well, we're looking for the bad guys. They were over there on that hill, but it seems they left now. You know, I mean, you know, it's drummed into us, bad guys, bad guys, bad guys, bad actors, bad guys. You know, well, obviously, we're the good guys, you know, is the unchallenged assumption. And that assumption needs to be challenged. And even if you think, and this is the point about broad unity, even if you think that in an overall sense, America is and should be a force for good in the world, how can you stand by and not do anything when the head of that country in that state says what Trump said at the UN? You know, and I think this is the kind of broad unity that needs to be built. You know, we need to struggle with people about this American chauvinism. But even if you've got in your head the idea that America's the greatest country in the world, and really this is an abomination because it goes against everything this country stands for, which it doesn't. But even if that's what you think, you should be outraged and you should be in the street. So I agree with you. This is, I wish I could say there's some easy way to deal with this, but I think the only way to deal with it is to struggle with people. And the other thing is get the word out so that people, you know, there is an effect on people's thinking by struggling with them, but there's also an effect on people's thinking when everywhere they go, they're seeing word of this group of people that's calling for this massive, and they say, oh, well, that's different then. You know, when I was just arguing with you, well, who are you? You know, you might be a nice person, but what are you going to do? But if they get the sense that there is actually a movement here, then it's reaching broadly, and everywhere they go, they're encountering at least the word of this. Then that changes people's thinking too, because a lot of people don't act because they don't want to be the only one to act. And then you get into the vicious cycle. Well, people don't act because they don't want to be the one to act, and a million people don't act because they don't want to be the first one to act. So they have to know about what refuse fascism is doing. I get back to that point. Now, quickly on the windows point, because I know other people want to ask questions. I agree with you. These windows are closing. I mean, you know, it's not, that's the limitation of the analogy I gave about the Vietnam War. It's that was different. You don't have years and years and years. Maybe you don't even have months and months and months and months to do something about this before it becomes incredibly more difficult to do anything. You know, and the normal channels are not going to solve the problem. And it could become, I mean, it's like what you were saying, you know, there are all these horrific laws that are being proposed and some are being passed that are extremely repressive. And, in all these state legislatures, and this is a weird country where the laws are not federal laws. I mean, there are federal laws, but most of the laws are state laws. It's the whole way the country developed. So, different states have different laws. But there are all these states that are passing under the radar, quote unquote, being passed under the radar that are highly repressive and are aimed at preventing people from actually protesting and demonstrating against anything significant. And people don't know about that, which they should. But we do, this window is closing. And I think that's something people have to be told very bluntly, too. You know, we shouldn't just understand the window ourselves. We should let other people know that, because it's real. It's not like, it's not a hype. Well, you know, this is a good gimmick to get people, we'll scare people into doing it by telling them that window's closing. No, it's actually objectively closing. And other people need to know that too. We need to understand it, but other people who think that, well, you know, things will work out somehow need to understand what's actually happening, because that is the reality. And the normalization, you know, I talked about that somewhat, and I agree with you again. That is happening. That is very bad. That, you know, it's, you know, learning to live with fascism is not a good thing. You know, and learning to live with all the particular outrages and the overall direction is very, very bad. And we need to talk to people about that too. Don't fall into the normalization. Every time the mainstream media refers to Trump as the president, a siren should go off in people's heads. You know, that this is the normalization warning should go off, because this is what's happening. You know, they're conditioning people, you know, somewhat subtly or whatever you want to say, that to accept this. and to hope that Democrats will get elected and somehow they'll do something they've never done before or whatever. You know, or maybe, you know, in 2020 we can vote Trump out. I mean, what is going to happen between now and then, even 2018? You know, so, you know, I just think that as we know about these windows and need to act with the commensurate urgency, other people need to know about it too. I think people need to understand that, and I go back to the word and the sense of a movement out here and the word about really needs to be out there very broadly in society, because that creates more favorable conditions for people to seriously consider, you know, and weigh stepping out of their comfort zone because they feel that they're doing it with many other people. So that's about what I can say about that. I wish there were something I could say that would make this easier, but we're just going to have to fight through it.
Okay. All right, once again, that was an excerpt from a talk given by Bob Avakian called "The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept a Fascist America. A Better World is Possible." And once again, a talk by Bob Avakian, and those were two of the question and answers posed to Avakian at the end of that talk. And if you want to hear the entire speech and the Q&A session, which I highly recommend, you'll find that at revcom.us. That's revcom.us. All right, sisters and brothers, you've been hearing about this for quite some time. And on November 4th, that's it. It begins. All right. And it's the campaign launched by Refuse Fascism. And it's built around, no, this nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And on November 4th, in cities all over the country, people will be coming out into the streets and staying in the streets until this regime is no longer in power. Over the next few weeks, we'll be featuring quite a bit from this, so stay tuned, because each and every person listening to this station, listening to this show, needs to figure out, how are you going to relate to this? And what difference will what you do make for the future of humanity? I want to thank each and every one of you for listening today, and I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and my board offer today, Teddy Robinson. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Part of the city where the sun refused to shine. People tell me it ain't no use in trying. My little girl, you're so young and pretty, and one thing I know is true, you're gonna die before.